Football fans, the wait is over. Playoff football is back in action this weekend, and now with Bet365, you can get in on it too. Starting Thursday, Bet365 is offering to double your money with a super boost on one or more passing yards in the Denver versus Buffalo game. That's right, all it takes is one single yard. So even if your team doesn't start strong, you can. Only with Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Select markets only. Minimum, maximum, wager, and fixed boost percentage applies. Super boost for single bets only. T&Cs and restrictions apply.
Welcome back to another episode of Forecast F1, the jewel in a crown. How bright was that jewel this weekend, Samantha?
Well, on Sunday, I mean, skies were a little gray, as we'll obviously talk about, but it was pretty bright. It was an exciting weekend.
It was. And yeah, you mentioned Sunday, but the Saturday was just brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah, the whole weekend was just really, really exciting. I would say that that qualifying session was probably the best, in my opinion, the most exciting qualifying session of the season so far.
Yeah, it was one of the best qualifying sessions I've ever seen. So, it was really, really good. Do you want to talk a little bit about the track, Samantha? Although I think it's one of the few tracks where there's not much to talk about changes, but go ahead.
Yeah, I guess I'll get into a few things when it comes to the track. So there are three sectors. There's only one DRS zone, and it is the shortest track of the season. They also resurfaced it, I think, about a month ago. So that's interesting. And I mean, Monaco itself, it's an iconic racetrack. There is so many memories in Monaco. So I think that in itself sets the tone for the weekend.
Yeah, I think it's a track that's been debated a lot over whether it actually suits current Formula One-like cars. But I don't know. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about that discussion. But, well, to just give my two cents, I think that it does happen to be a parade quite a lot of the times. But then again, you know, I think you got to have Monaco on the calendar. And you should just try to avoid to have more parades. I think one of them is good to have during the year. I mean, of course, you would like to see a good race, and we did get to see a good race. That's not always the case, but it does mean that the Saturday is just, well, I mean, it can be otherwise, like we've seen last year, but there's a big climax there, and yeah, it's a great track. What do you think about having Monaco on the calendar, Sam?
I think it absolutely should be a part of the calendar because it has, number one, it's a wealth of memories. It's such a huge element to the history of Formula One in itself that to not have it as a part of the calendar, I think you would lose part of the integrity of what Formula One is all about. And so it is, although yes, it is a slower track, it's one where there's not a lot of room to have overtaking. Again, the essence of what a weekend in Monaco is all about really is something that I think always needs to be a part of every season.
Yeah, the setup of the cars need to be that much different compared to other tracks, which I think is also a good thing to have. I mean, you do need to have some sort of variation on the calendar. The tracks can't all just be the same. So it's actually good to have this far outlier where everybody needs to go full downforce setup, and I think it's fun to have something like that on the calendar because you already see now, of course, with Imola being cancelled, a lot of teams who wanted to bring updates to the first European track on the calendar now doubting whether to do that on Monaco, yes or not. I think that brings an element of yeah, I mean, it makes it just that much more unpredictable, which is good because if everything is easy to predict, that would not be cool either, would it?
100%. I mean, I'm glad you brought up the upgrades because we were talking about upgrades and Mercedes was expected to bring a significant amount of upgrades into Imola and they ended up having to bring it to Monaco, which, like you said, is not a track that you would be able to really utilize, at least with the upgrades that they have, really be able to see what they're capable of with it. But it is interesting to mention those upgrades that they had. They had new side pods, front suspension, and a floor. I think the most significant upgrades for Mercedes going into this weekend was the front suspension and the side pods. Definitely the side pods look entirely different from the first beginning of this season. And Ferrari and Alpine also came in with some upgrades going into Monaco.
Yeah, side pods to begin with, because there weren't much.
Yeah, there wasn't much to begin with.
No, there wasn't much at all. Season. No, but yeah, I think the team will probably still be a little bit in doubt whether, because I think it's difficult to really test that out on Monaco. I mean, you can see how it does, but you don't have much to compare it with. Perhaps to some of the slow sectors in Baku, I think you can compare the previous car, the previous no sidepod car, to the current race in Monaco. But I think it'll be interesting to see also on a track like Barcelona next weekend. I don't want to go too much into the future, but of course that's a track where a lot of testing is being done regularly, where teams will have a little bit more of an idea how it relates to, let's say, a more general, more regular racing track. But anyway, yeah, so those were the updates that you mentioned, and let's go into qualifying.
Yeah, actually, one thing I'll say, one other update I just want to make mention to, because I wish they would keep this livery for the rest of the season, is the McLaren livery for this weekend, the Triple Crown. I really, really liked it.
Oh, it was gorgeous.
I admired that.
Gorgeous. Yeah. I really loved it. Loved it.
I really do hope. Well, I don't know why I'm saying hope, because that's not in the cards, but I really wish that they would keep a livery like that for the rest of the season.
It's kind of funny, because if you look at it, the change of the livery from last year to this year was anticipated to be a little bit more of a change than, and not just for McLaren, I think in general, with a lot of the liveries, there was some disappointment. And you can see, I mean, if I look around the other comments on this McLaren livery, I mean, I think everybody loved it. So it's funny that the teams don't do much more with that. I mean, of course, you saw the Red Bull livery being different for Miami, but then again, they also hardly change their livery from year to year. But again, let's skip the livery talk, because I think we want to talk about the Monaco race, don't we?
Yeah, let's get into qualifying. Like we said, one of the most exciting qualifyings that we've ever seen. So definitely looking forward to talking about it.
Yeah, it was great. I think we all know that Monaco is more about qualifying than the race. So I was hoping that it would be good, but I would have never hoped it would be this good.
Yeah, and actually, before we even touch on it, just to elaborate a little bit on that, the reason why qualifying is so crucial is because of the fact that there's little to no room to overtake. So essentially, where you finish in qualifying is paramount going into the race. And so I think that, yeah, that also adds an extra element of excitement leading into this weekend, because you know the amount of pressure that's on these drivers when it comes to Saturday.
So I think the qualifying session started out with a pretty quick hit from Perez into the wall. What did you make of it?
Well, I think that, I mean, he crashed last year, but this time it wasn't in Q3 after he had done a monster lap. It was unfortunately in the beginning of Q1, so that impacted him. But I think he obviously was just going with way too much speed into the entry of that chicane, and you know, the rear just couldn't keep up. So unfortunately for him, that was too much. He was done for qualifying. And for Red Bull itself, one driver out, because again, like we mentioned, when it comes to qualifying, it's paramount where you're positioned. So for him, now he was starting Sunday's race at the back of the grid.
Yeah, it was basically a Red Bull sandwich, wasn't it?
I guess you could look at it like that, yeah. A Red Bull sandwich.
Yeah, I think what was, I don't know, let's look at Q1 a little bit. I think what was, it was nice to see Piastri just making it out of Q1. He didn't have a bad qualifying, but he just made it out at the expense of Sargeant, I think it was. And yeah, Sargeant was a bit unlucky, and he didn't have a great weekend at all. But yeah, out of Q3, we didn't see Joe into Q2, Hülkenberg and Magnussen, the two Haas drivers, didn't make it into Q2, and like I said, Logan Sargeant also failed to qualify for Q2.
I mean, when you look at it, all the rookies were unable to get into Q1, and some of them, yes, managed to get into Q2. Looking at Monaco, we know there's zero room for error. It's an extremely demanding track. It is incredibly technical. And so for a rookie to be able to do well on a track like this is quite impressive. So yeah, for Piastri, I think it was a very decent qualifying. And even for De Vries as well, who's been struggling throughout the season, to manage to get into Q2 was definitely well done. What did you think about Yuki?
Yeah, I mean, Yuki, I think it was Q3, right? Where Yuki was P2,
yeah, he got
and
into
Albon
Q3.
Was, yeah, but no, sorry, I'm messing it up. I meant in Q1, it was
yes.
Tsunoda who set that P2 time, and Albon set a P3 time, right? I think that was,
yes.
That was shocking, because I thought, like you said, De Vries did a good job, but again, that was overshadowed a little bit by the performance of Yuki, which was really, really good.
Yeah, and then it seemed like he was having an issue in Q2 with his brakes. I think he locked up there and it kind of threw him off. But he did, when I saw him go up to the top in the very first qualifying session, I was so excited to see that, because again, you know that anything's possible depending on where people position going into Monaco. And he's been doing really well this season. So I didn't expect him, though, to get up that high. I didn't. So it was definitely a pleasant surprise.
It was a very good performance. And also seeing Albon do that well in Q1, it was a shame he didn't make it into Q3. He got stuck in Q2. In the end, he qualified P13. But to see him up there in Q1 was kind of surprising, because you would say that Williams, well, if you look at different track layouts and their top speed that they have, but being so bad in slow corners, you wouldn't expect them to do well in Monaco. So that was kind of like a surprising start of the qualifying session. But in the end, he didn't make it much further than Q2. But who did make it to Q3 was Lando, which I think he does like the Monaco track. He usually sets pretty good times there in qualifying. I think I wasn't expecting a McLaren to make it to Q3. Did you?
You know, I was going into this weekend optimistic, because I feel like with the upgrades, they still have yet to really, we haven't really had much time to really see what those upgrades, the potential that they have put into the car. And going into practices, he was doing really, really well during practice. So I was hopeful that he was maybe going to get into Q3. I was really happy to see that he did, and he seemed to be doing really well. This track obviously favors him. It was 2 years ago that I believe he came in third. He managed to get on the podium, which was quite impressive. So again, practice, he was doing really well. Going into qualifying, I was hopeful. It was unfortunate, though, I will say, that I feel like he could have finished obviously higher than he did, but during qualifying, he had that incident where he hit the barrier coming out of the chicane. I believe it looked like it was an understeer. So could he have potentially finished higher? I think so. I mean, we may have seen him crack the P5, P6 possibly. But I still think that it was a solid result for McLaren overall, given the history of the season so far.
Agreed. Yeah, I think he managed to go out for a run in Q3, but and it was actually quite impressive that they managed to set up the car for him to even be able to compete in Q3. But I think Q3 we focus a little bit more on some of the other drivers. Because what did you make of that battle for getting pole? I mean, that was
wow.
A new climax, wasn't it?
It was unbelievable. I was on the edge of my seat, and I felt like I knew. And then it was just one after the other after the other. So I guess we'll just talk a little bit about that and what exactly we mean by that. So to describe it, basically, in Q3, at first, we were completely surprised by Ocon taking pole.
Yeah.
That was a surprise in itself. So you're already looking at it going, what is happening? And then the very next driver to cross was Leclerc, who replaced Ocon. And that was obviously exciting for a variety of reasons. And shortly after that, it was Alonso who then took pole position. So it was one after the other after the other. But I think the most impressive thing that happened after that was Verstappen then securing pole after Alonso. And the reason why is simply because if you go back and you see that actual qualifying session, Verstappen was struggling through the first two sectors of that final lap. So he was actually behind Alonso. It wasn't until the last two turns in that final sector where he somehow was able to maximize and just squeeze the most that he could out of the car to overtake and end up securing pole. That in itself is incredibly impressive. I mean, the pressure that you have in that situation to be able to do that on a track like Monaco, it's remarkable.
True. I think that, Alonso also didn't have a very great last sector. So he did have very good first two sectors. So Max was struggling, but Alonso also left a little bit of room to have somebody else improve. I think I don't have the real sector times here, but I think Ocon only was a thousandth of a second slower than Verstappen in that third sector. So I think it also had to do a lot with Alonso just not having such a good third sector, and of course having very good first two sectors. And I'm not going to lie, I would have liked to see Max start from the fifth position during this race. Or let's say fourth, because of Leclerc also getting a penalty, which I guess we're going to come to next. But in the end, it was a superhuman lap from Verstappen. And I think he really, like you said, under pressure, I think he does have the car to do it, and we all expected him. Although I don't know, it wasn't even 100% clear to me that when Alonso set that lap that Verstappen was still managing to do another flyer. I wasn't 100% sure at first. And I think a lot of people were already celebrating Alonso's so-called pole, but it wasn't to be. And in the end, you know, you gotta give credits when they're due.
Well, Verstappen had also hit the barrier, I believe, in his previous attempt. And so you're right. I mean, I was thinking about it, wondering if he was going to really be able to maximize after he had kissed the barriers there or kissed the wall. So the fact that he managed to do that, again, is impressive. But I think all in all, as a whole, when you're looking at those top five drivers and how short the gap was in qualifying with all five of them, and how, I should say all four of them, and how quickly it just so happened to be where one secured pole, then it was the next and the next and the next. It just heightens the intensity of qualifying. Again, you go back to the situation that you know that it matters so much where a driver is positioned. So to have it happen in sequence like that was really, really cool.
Yeah, true. I think in the end, the first eight positions, there was just about six hundreds of a second in between them. It was all very, very close. And what did you think of Leclerc getting that penalty for blocking Lando in the tunnel?
Ouch. That was my first thought.
Right.
It was painful to see, because from where I sit, it looked like it was the largest issue with that situation was more so a communication error. He was in the tunnel. I feel like he should have been notified by his team that Lando was coming up behind him so that he was able to move away from the racing line. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case. And he suffered a place penalty, a three-place penalty, which for some reason for Leclerc, it always seems like when it comes to Monaco, he just has unfortunate luck. He really does.
Yeah. you're right, there was a lack of communication, but I also think it's not fair to just put it on Xavi, on his race engineer, because, you know, when you look at that onboard and listen to the onboard radio of Leclerc, he just set the lap where he was, I think, he just realized that he was P2, because at that point Verstappen hadn't set his lap yet. So he was just behind Alonso, and he was just very pissed off and not really paying much attention on his surroundings. So he entered into the tunnel, and I think he was quite, like, he was not on the racing. Well, you know, within the tunnel, there's a little bit of a slight corner, right, towards the right. And he was quite on the middle of the road there. Should have been more towards the left. Shouldn't have slowed down as much as he did. I don't think that's a good thing to do in that tunnel, because there's very little vision over there. So yeah, he should definitely have been notified, but I also thought it wasn't the best example of driving and keeping the track clear for somebody that's setting a flyer. So I think in the end, both of us, regardless of whose fault it is, we agree that the three place grip penalty was a fair punishment for what happened.
Yeah, I do think that it was a fair punishment. And I do agree. I think that he also plays a part in that grid penalty or three place penalty. But it's just unfortunate to see all together, right? Because True. Going into this weekend, and with the history of Leclerc and the unfortunate situations that continue to happen, and nobody to blame, just simply the fact that there are unfortunate situations at the end of the day that have consistently happened for him, there is a little bit of hope that maybe something will turn around. So once he received that, you know that it's going to be incredibly difficult for him to actually secure his first win in his home of Monaco.
Seems like he's not the only one who's having bad luck. His brother doesn't have much luck in his hometown either.
Yeah, he had a tough weekend too, didn't he?
Yeah, for sure. So with Leclerc getting pushed down, that meant that Ocon was actually starting P3 on the second line.
Right, right. Yeah, that's really exciting. And you also have both Mercedes, Hamilton and Russell, starting in P4 and P5, just ahead of Leclerc. So I guess let's get into talking about the race. Anton, let's first talk about the first part of the race where there was no rain. So why don't you start? Tell us a little bit about some of the things that you picked up on at the beginning of the race itself.
At the very beginning, I was surprised that Perez was starting on mediums. I would have thought he would either go for hards, sit it out until the end, or start on softs. So that was a bit of a surprise. And I think only Joe started on softs and then pitted on the first lap or after the first lap. And so did Perez and Hülkenberg. They both pitted from their mediums onto the hards after one lap. So the beginning of the race go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say just a question about strategy when it comes to Perez, because what I thought the same thing as you. But then I thought to myself, I was listening to Horner getting interviewed prior to the race, and he was talking about how important it was for them to try to get Perez into a position where he had clean air. And so I wonder if that was the strategy all along, was to start him on mediums to then pit after the first lap so that they can dump him out in clean air on hards with an opportunity to kind of run the rest of the race, at least as much as they would hope to see if that's going to make a difference in moving up the grid.
But if you're going to pit him after one lap, why put him on mediums? Why not put him on softs? He might overtake someone at the start.
Possibly, that's true. It's a very valid point. I don't know. But it was a thought when I saw it happen. I thought, well, maybe this was a part of their strategy. I don't know. Because either way, to pit after the first lap, and I don't think that he suffered any damage during the first lap, from who was it that got into
it? Was Stroll that got into
yeah.
touching people left and right. Well, mostly Sargent on his left side. He tried to I don't know, he got in between the wall and Sargent twice. Like, first time he actually, like, it hit his tire, and then the second time it was a slight touch on his front wing. I think that was a very clumsy start from Stroll, where actually Stroll's usually pretty strong during the starts. I mean, he usually has good starts.
Yeah, so he didn't suffer any damage, I believe, coming out of that. So the question would be whether or not they intended to do that strategically, or whether or not they just decided right away, okay, mediums aren't the way to go, let's switch to hards. But I guess maybe we'll find out at some point. Maybe we never will.
Yeah, at least a good thing for Perez was that when he made that pit stop, he got out just in front of Joe and Hülkenberg, which gave him a little bit of air. Well, that didn't last very long either, because I think he got stuck then behind Magnussen. But yeah, I think other than that, the first 10 or so laps were relatively uneventful until Sainz got out of the tunnel and Ocon was all of a sudden very, very close to him.
He definitely was. And you heard on the radio Sainz talking about the fact that he was going to apply pressure onto Ocon. And it was just right after that that he ended up damaging his front wing at the expense of Ocon's rear end. So, yeah, I was thinking that maybe they were going to possibly call a virtual safety car or something to clear the debris. They didn't. In fact, I'm kind of happy that they didn't to some extent. But he ran a very long portion of that race with that damaged front wing.
Yeah, I think the part that fell off, I think Hamilton hit it, drove over it.
He did.
And I think that probably pushed it off the track. So that made it unnecessary to call a safety car, because yeah, usually if you have like a front end plate laying on the track, you would. But what I was surprised of was that it didn't result into a penalty, because if I'm completely honest, I think it should have been a penalty. I think if you look at, you know, stewards are not supposed to look at the actual outcome of somebody touching somebody else. I mean, it's supposed to be just the action of doing so. And if it could have been very different, Ocon could have had a puncture and his race could have been over. And I think it was 100% Sainz, his mistake. And I know that Sainz had a penalty. When was that? In Australia, when he was crying over the radio and everything. Or in Baku, sorry. No, when was that?
It was Australia.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know if that had anything to do with it. Probably not. But I'm sure he would have come on the radio and cried again. But to be really, really honest with you, I think that should have been a penalty.
Yeah, it definitely would have pause as to whether or not a penalty should have been handed out to him. I think that overall, for Sainz, the entire race, to sum it up in one word, would have been frustrating. You saw that incident. He was expressing his frustration and he was not happy with his team over some decisions that they were making, such as pitting him and then him still staying behind Ocon. There was a few moments where the team itself would come on the radio and say that they were going to they were going to pit to overtake Ocon, and then they would say, you know, forget it. And obviously it was a bluff. They did it twice. And so you do have to question some of the strategy that was involved as well when it came to his race. And I think overall it was definitely a challenging drive for him. To me, I feel like even with that move on Ocon, there was an overwhelming sense of panic, or just maybe he's struggling with the pressure during the race itself. Because even hearing his voice on the radio, and he's trying to make moves that are a little bit more uncharacteristic of him. He's taking a lot more risks, but not in a strategic sense in some degree. So I wonder if being in the position that he's in, he's had a few challenges over the last few races, and if maybe it's wearing on him and it's translating into his race overall in Monaco.
But the bluffs were weird, because he was on hards and Ocon started on mediums, and I don't know.
Yeah.
It was, I know that Ferraris have relatively high tire degradation, but it was just, I don't know. It looked very, very clumsy to me. And
yes.
Yeah, I think giving frustration as a key word that sums it all up. So I think not only during the dry part of the race, but also during the wet part of the race, he seemed to slip a lot, and he seemed to, well, he also slipped into one of the runoff areas, but he was slipping constantly. I think, yeah, all in all, extremely frustrating for him to, I don't know, to want so much more, but to not be able to really grasp that.
Yeah, I completely agree. Okay, so talking about drivers who had had a challenging Sunday, what about Stroll?
Yeah, that was a challenge. It definitely was, like we mentioned.
Talk about risky moves.
Yeah, that too. No, in the start of the race, he had a bad start. He, I think it was, well, I mean, it wasn't all his fault. At a certain point, Perez also tried to overtake him. That was when Verstappen was lapping him for the first time, and he was trying to stay in Verstappen's gearbox and pass the train that was in front of them. And Verstappen passed Stroll. Stroll had to, you know, let Verstappen pass because he was lapping him. Of course, he didn't have to let Perez pass. And we all know that there's not too much overtaking space in Monaco, so let alone having two cars overtake yourself. I think that was only possible with Sargeant most of the time. But yes, Perez overtaking Stroll at that point was just a little bit too much. They touched wheels. And I think it was understandable that Stroll also didn't give him that much space. It was also understandable, on the other hand, that Perez tried to take the opportunity because he was getting frustrated there at the back too. But that was well. And then later, Perez also tapped into the back of Magnussen. Although your question to me was initially on how Stroll's race was, so let me not digress too much. But and in the end, Stroll had to, I think he pitted for the Inters when it started raining, and his race was over pretty soon after that. But I think it must have been frustrating to see Alonso drive there at the top. But again, it was partly his own doing for not qualifying very well. So, understandably frustrating. But just to round it off, I think Monaco is a track where the skills of a driver really show. And in the end, there's somewhat a difference between Alonso and Stroll. And it gets expressed pretty well in a track like this.
Well, in qualifying too, I believe he hit debris during Q2 that affected his car. But I do think that obviously there is a lot more experience. There's a wealth of experience behind Alonso. Alonso's just in a class of his own. For most drivers, that would have to be the second driver batting against Alonso. It would definitely be a tough position to be in. And I think you're right. He had a few unfortunate circumstances that he had a puncture in the first lap where he had to pit. But at the same time, yes,
he did pit in the end. He was talking about a puncture on the radio, but he never did pit. He was just slow.
I thought he did pit. Oh,
no, he didn't.
Okay.
He really didn't.
Well, that's my mistake then. But I do think that overall he had a few moments that were beyond his control, but he also had a few overtake attempts that definitely were risky and were questionable on a track like Monaco in places themselves where you wouldn't necessarily be overtaking.
Yeah, and then towards, when was it, a little after lap 50, 51, some clouds started to form. I guess they were already forming, but they started to dangle over the track.
The rain started to come, and what a wild element to add as well, because that rain only covered a portion of the track, and not to mention the fact that it came down very, very quickly. So actually, one other thing to mention is that it just so happened that this weekend was where Pirelli had introduced the new wet tire as well. So we were able to see that go into effect, where it's a new tire that doesn't require the tire blankets.
Right. They're not allowed to preheat them. It's true.
That's right. But I guess touching on just the weather itself, it seemed to land on a specific area of the track where the rain itself was developing quite quickly, and everybody itself was on either hards or mediums. So at this point, especially for the top five drivers, they hadn't pitted yet. So their tire degradation was already at a very weak point. So it was a nail biter. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I think there was a couple of things that went, it was quite chaotic. And there were a couple of things that went, well, slightly sour. I think I still don't understand why Aston Martin got Alonso to change for mediums. Like, he was on the hards and he went in, and I guess, well, at that point, a couple of other drivers had already gone on to Inters taking the gas, and I thought Alonso would be the first. Like, he didn't have much to lose, right? I mean, he had quite distance to Verstappen, so I thought he would go on Inters straight away. And of course, Verstappen was already pulling it out very long on the mediums as well. So it was a given that he would go to Inters on the same lap. But I was surprised Alonso seeing him put on the mediums and then had to go in the lap after and change to the actual Inters. That lost him quite a bit of time, which in the end, I guess, wouldn't have made too much of a difference, but still quite hard to understand.
I think in some respects, maybe if we're trying to wonder why those decisions were made, because there was only a portion of the track that was wet and the rain developed over a very brief period of time, initially maybe their expectation was that they were going to be able to have the upper hand with the others that were taking Inters while they had mediums. It was a risky decision because coming out of the tunnel, there was definitely dry conditions, but that obviously changed. I think once the rain hit and the unpredictability of the situation itself, you really started to see where teams were able to get it right and others not so much. I would say one other driver to mention is Magnussen. He was the last remaining on hards after everybody had switched to Inters. So he was still there. You could see him struggling. He actually went into the wall with one turn left before he was trying to pit to be put on. I believe he went to wets.
Yeah, he was the first to go to full wets. That's right.
Yeah. And we also saw other situations, one being the fact and another risky strategic decision that actually played out to their advantage was Red Bull with Max, because he was in a situation where you could clearly see the graining on his tires themselves. So he was maximizing, no pun intended, he was maximizing the length that he could put towards those tires. I think that he had 56 laps before he actually ended up pitting with the medium tires that he had. And they usually last about 43. But in a situation like that, the conditions change quite quickly. You could see everybody else was switching to Inters, and they had chosen to keep him out there, obviously with the strategy in mind to see exactly how everybody's decisions were going to play out so that they had more room to make the right decision. It's a risky one. They're obviously putting the reliance in the driver to be able to perform and be able to handle what he's doing on the track. And of course, what better driver than Max Verstappen? But it definitely worked to their advantage, because by the time he was able to pit, he was able to come out on Inters, and that was the right decision at the end of the day.
True. Another team that had questionable, you know, when I look at Verstappen and Alonso making these decisions, they were at least the only team members of those teams out there at the front of the race, which makes it, you know, it makes it slightly harder compared to when you have two drivers of the same team who are more or less in the same situation. So I think Ferrari, again, there was not, I think previously they were already not so straightforward on, well, mostly with Sainz on his pitting, when there was all this going back and forth on the radio. In the end, when he did pit, he was extremely angry about the team just looking to fend off Hamilton, whereas he was trying to focus on overtaking Ocon. And then when the rain started coming down, you saw that, actually, Mercedes also did a double stack. So Hamilton and Russell pitted on the same lap to go from their hards to Inters. And then Ferrari, who were still out there. I mean, at that point, I would have expected Ferrari to, I mean, they know they're not that great at double stacking, so why don't you let one driver take strategy A, for example, Sainz, let him go from his mediums on the Inters on the same lap as Mercedes did, and then wait it out a little bit longer with Leclerc. But they're going for the same strategy for both drivers again. And that I don't know. When I look at that team, I just see them struggling so much. And, you know, you can have struggles. That's all right. And I mean, it can't all go right all of the time, but it goes wrong most of the time with them. And you know, it's not an internal struggle anymore. It's very much something that goes out into the public. And I don't think that's very good for the team. I don't know what the newspapers are going to write in Italy tomorrow, but I doubt whether it's going to be very positive.
Yeah, I think it's tough on the team. It's tough on the drivers. The unfortunate consistency that we see is the questionable strategic decisions that are made time and time again. And I agree. I question why you would create the same strategic decision for both drivers, because no matter what, if it's going to go wrong, then it's going to go wrong for both of them. And that was really unfortunate to see both of them still on mediums and then being forced to pit. So I hope that things turn around. I really do. But right now, it's tough. It's tough to see where Ferrari's at right now. Now, mind you, let's not forget, on a positive note, they did finish within the top 10. Both drivers earned points, so we can give them credit there. And going into qualifying, even in Q2, they were both really strong. They seem to do well typically during qualifying. Where they really seem to struggle is always on Sundays. And so let's hope that maybe things are going to be a lot more bright in the future. But I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's a very big question.
And they did finish in point positions. But I think that if you look at all the races so far in this season and you analyze a little bit how the cars are performing in the different types of corners, and you will see actually that in the slow corners, Ferrari was doing really, really good. So I think they should set the bar a little bit higher than finishing sixth and eighth. And I think they do set the bar higher. They just don't they don't manage to really reach there.
Yeah, and a lot of things play a part in those results. Strategy, drivers' frustrations. I think that Sainz, the decisions that he had made as well, some of his frustration came out on the track. So all in all, as a whole, Ferrari is definitely struggling and isn't at the tier that we are so used to seeing them at in terms of history. So my fingers are crossed for them. I hope for a bright future. We still have a lot more races left on the calendar, but time's really going to tell where they end up.
Yeah, no, so do I. I would like to see them do a lot better, and I would like to see them challenge Red Bull for race wins. It's just not really happening. But yeah, let's hope for a turnaround. And let's hope that the same happens for Mercedes with their new concept. What did you think of Russell's 5-second penalty when he, I think it was him and Stroll that went off, and then he got back on track and hit. I wasn't really 100% sure whether he got the penalty actually for that or was it for rejoining out of the pits. I think it was rejoining out of that runoff area, right, where he hit Perez, or Perez hit him. But I guess Russell got the penalty, so I guess it was his fault.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was from rejoining the track and then colliding with Perez. And Russell, there was a few moments. What did you think towards the end of the race where he was mentioning on the radio where he wanted to do team orders to get an advantage? Because he was handed a 5-second penalty. And I believe at the time when he was asking for team orders, it was trying to maximize as much distance as he had against Leclerc so his position wouldn't change. But what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, I guess by now we know that Russell comes on the radio and asks for these things, which I kind of understand, because you are right. He did have that 5-second penalty. So if he would have jumped Hamilton, Hamilton might have still finished fourth with Russell behind him with Russell's penalty. But then in the end, he did manage to stay in front of Leclerc. So it wasn't. But he was talking about being able to challenge for Ocon, which with his 5-second penalty wouldn't have happened anyway. Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's, you know, from his perspective, I can understand that he comes on the radio and asks for it. But Hamilton was in basically the same situation. So, yeah, that wasn't really going to. I don't think it would have been very nice to see team orders there. Then again, yeah, I guess at sometimes they're hard to avoid, team orders, aren't they? I don't like them, but yeah.
Yeah, and Hamilton did end up taking fastest lap. I think that initially when Russell was asking that, he was doing a little bit better than Hamilton, but that quickly changed because during that time the track was drying in a rapid pace. So it gave Hamilton and any other driver the ability to pick up the pace, which he did. So although maybe it would have made sense to benefit Russell at the time, yeah, I agree. I'm not a fan of team orders. I much rather would just like them to race and see where everybody ends up.
So who we did see racing was the McLarens overtaking Tsunoda and finishing both in point scoring positions.
Right. It was really great to see McLaren be able to get into the top 10, get into points. That was a solid result for Piastri as well. I think overall he had a really great weekend. We've touched on Norris doing potentially could have done even better, really, with his result when you think about it, if he ended up higher in qualifying without that incident. But overall, it was really great to see them finish in the top 10. They're able to earn some points, much needed. And unfortunately for Tsunoda, I mean, they obviously capitalized on his situation with his brakes. He was doing so well for this weekend and didn't end up that way at the end of Sunday's race. But again, very great to see McLaren up there.
Yeah, it was good to see them. And what was funny actually was that Norris, I think he came on his engineer came on the radio very much in the beginning of the race saying that they were expecting some rain in lap 35, which didn't come at all. And then when the rain was actually getting pretty close to the track, he pitted to go from mediums to hards, like at around lap 50 or so. And then, you know, that was just before the rain was actually coming and he had to go back into the pits again, getting in there. So that was a slightly strange call from their team. But yeah, I agree with you. It was great to see Piastri score points. And the two of them being so close, like what you said earlier, during training, Norris was way ahead of Piastri. It didn't really, you know, of course, F2 drivers also have some experience at Monaco. But I felt for him at the beginning of the weekend because I thought that it's going to be very hard to compete to somebody that is very, very good at Monaco, but in the end, finishing so close together, that was quite a bit of a surprise, and it shows again the amount of talent that Piastri has.
Absolutely. He was the only rookie driver to finish in the top 10, and I think that definitely is something to mention because, like you said, I mean, the skill to drive not only in Monaco, but in those conditions towards the end of the race, you have cars that are struggling, they're attempting to apply power on the track. They know that it's a slower situation, that it's already a slow track. They're already having to drive slower. They have to maintain the warmth in the tires in slippery conditions. You have everything else that we've already discussed. So the fact that he comes in as a rookie, he finishes in the top 10, that's impressive.
True. So do you have any other things that you want to talk about regarding the race, Sam?
Yeah, I think that the two really great things that we should mention are, number one, Esteban Ocon and his fantastic finish. He managed to secure a podium, and it was a big win for Ocon, but not only for Ocon, but for Alpine. And they've had a little bit of a rough road this season so far. We discussed in the last podcast that they had faced some criticism from the Alpine CEO, Laurent Rossi. And Gasly also finished in the top 10, which was great. So they earned points for both drivers. But Ocon's drive overall and weekend in itself was, I thought, really impressive as well. In the race alone, he was under pressure from Ferrari. He obviously had Sainz hot on his heels. And then towards the end of the race, he also had Mercedes. But the fact that he was able to finish the race with no mistakes whatsoever, weather the storm, and come out still in third was really, really great. So I definitely think it's important to mention his success, and also he ended up getting driver of the day.
No, I really applaud his performance. It was really good. It wasn't even that much of a lucky race. He was kind of unlucky at some points with Sainz touching him from behind, and his pit stop was also pretty slow, like a 4.2 pit stop on lap 33. That was not really helping him. And yeah, like you mentioned, he fended off Hamilton pretty well, keeping it at 1.5, 2.5 seconds towards the end of the race, and definitely deserving that podium. And yeah, I mean, good race and good qualifying, and yeah, these two things together, well, they score you 15 points.
Absolutely. And we also have two other drivers who are on the podium that have achieved some nice results. Alonso, this is his fifth podium out of six races. That is amazing. And when it comes to Verstappen, he now has secured the most wins out of any Red Bull driver. I'm not surprised, given the success that he's had over the several years, but that's definitely an accolade. I think that also to mention, when it comes to his drive itself, the fact that he battled a rainstorm, he hit the barriers, he went through a situation where he had to maximize, again, I say maximize, no pun intended, but he had to just stretch those tires, those medium tires, to the absolute limit at 56 laps. Overall, again, the weekend, coming under a high-pressure situation, managing to secure pole, and then taking the win in the way that he did, was definitely a very successful weekend for him and for Red Bull, obviously. Maybe not so much for Perez, but for Max, it was another podium for this season. He strengthens his lead in the championship itself, and I don't know at this point who can really compete with him continuing on throughout the season. I mean, we still have a lot of races, but he just seems unstoppable at this point.
Yeah, great achievement from all three on the podium, and can't agree with you more. I think it was a tremendous race from Verstappen, and I would have loved to see Alonso take it, but I guess it's also kind of nice building up towards Alonso taking all these P3s and a P4 and now P2, and I guess we're all wondering if he can. We all know he has it in him, but he's at the hands of Red Bull for seeing whether he can. Well, let's hope that he can do it in his home race next week. That would be
very true.
But it seems like we're going to say this on every podcast and hope for Alonso to win the next one. But yeah, I mean, that also is some sort of a climax in itself. Let's hope that actually, ends up happening. But I don't want to jinx anything either.
Well, here's a question for you. So what do you think the chances are that Alonso possibly stays through to 2026? Because it was just announced this week that Aston Martin is going to be changing their power unit from Mercedes to Honda going into 2026. So do you think he's going to be there?
I don't know. I mean, I would love to say yes, but then again, it's also a bit of a stretch. It's 26 is still some time away, and it's hard to tell. You know, it's in that team with one seat basically given away, it's difficult to tell, because I could also imagine Honda wanting to see Yuki in that seat, for example. I mean, in a couple of years, he's going to have a bit more experience. And yeah, I don't know. I would love to see Alonso race still at that time. But, let's just say I would really love to see it, but I'm not counting on it.
Well, we'll see. So I think that wraps up the race coverage. If there's anything else that you wanted to add, Anton?
No, that's it for my part too.
All right, so let's get into scores.
Right, so in this section, we usually do a lot of quiz questions. And I want to start with the first one with you, which is, how many pit stops did Perez have this race?
Three?
Uh-uh.
Okay, how many pit stops did he have?
It was five.
Five pit stops?
Yeah, really.
Oh my goodness. Well, I clearly did not pay attention to that, but that's a lot.
Yeah, I've written it down. He started on the mediums, he went to the hards, and then he went back onto mediums. Then he went to inters. Then, like, 3 or 4 laps later, he went to full wets, and he also went back still to inters. So, yeah, 5 in total.
Wow. Yeah. They were busy in Red Bull, Grosch.
Yeah, I guess at some point they were just doing pit stop practice.
I do remember when they were switching at the end of the race, when they went to wets, I was wondering if they were doing that to test out the longevity of the tires and see how they fared, being as the fact that he was at the end anyways, he wasn't really going to make any advancements. I mean, if you're going to test out the tires and you're going to see also the effectiveness and how you would implement maybe the strategy for Max going in towards the end of the race, that would be the right time to do it. Yeah, when your drive, when you're unfortunately your second driver isn't able to really gain much of an advantage.
It's actually funny to see that, given the difficulty of the track and also the weather that was quite changeable, that we only had one real DNF. Oh no, we had two. I think Magnussen also stopped, right? So Stroll and Magnussen.
And Sargeant, actually. He retired right at the end of the race. So there were three retirements.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. But still, that isn't a whole lot. But I guess that's already 3 more than we had in Miami.
Well, and considering the changes in the weather and the amount of risk and that was in place at the end of the race, it's actually really, it attributes towards the skill of these drivers themselves and the fact that they were able to manage through everything that was thrown at them and still be able to come out without a DNF, majority of the track itself.
True, right. All right, so let's really go to scores now. So we had 424 people playing the game this weekend. I thought at first 423, but there was actually somebody that sent me a private message with his picks way before the deadline, so I missed that. So 424 players, and we had the lowest average score so far this season with 38.0. Being the average. So that's that's pretty low, which I guess is mostly a result of having somebody on the podium that was very unpredictable. So of course, almost everybody missed out that 15 points for Ocon. We're going to see how many people, or if any people, actually had that predicted. But we get later to that. So let's look at our podium places for this weekend. And we had on P1 from Turkey, Abdullah Emre. He scored 70.5 points. Getting right Verstappen on P1, Alonso on P2. He had Hamilton on P3, so he still scored 6 points for that. He had Perez on P4, so no points there. He had a correct P5, which was Russell. Correct P6, which was Leclerc. He then had Sainz, so still scored some points for Sainz, who finished 8th. He had Hülkenberg on 8, Gasly on 9th, so scored 1.5 points for that, and P10, Joe, so no points for that. So getting to 70.5 points, which was the highest of this weekend.
Very nice.
And then we had a shared P2, so there were 2 people that got 68 points. Those were Kenzo Scheurwerks from Belgium and Nathan Bessière from France. So both of them also had P1 and P2 correct. Kenzo also had Hamilton on P4, and he actually had Norris on P9 correct. Nathan had a correct P1, correct P2, Hamilton on P4. He had Gasly on P7 and Norris on P9. And the two of them also scored a couple of other points for people getting drivers close to the right place. So yeah, 68 points. Share P2. Well done.
Well done indeed.
So now I think I asked you previously as well, how many people predicted the correct podium?
Oh boy, I did so well last time. Okay, there's my sarcasm. I'm going to say 32. Wait, I take it back. Hold on, I take it back. I take it back because Ocon managed to hit the podium, and to be honest, I don't think a lot of people would have decided that. So I'm going to say 2.
No one predicted the podium correct.
Wow. Yeah. Oh my goodness. To be honest, I'm not that surprised, because again, if you were picking Oh, I wouldn't have thought that, and obviously nobody else did. It was a very pleasant surprise to see him manage to get on the podium for everybody, yeah, apparently.
No, I agree. And you can also imagine that, let's say you do put Ocon on P3, which is kind of a stretch, you're probably going to put P1 Verstappen, P2 Perez, I would suppose. Well, I don't know. Could have been Alonso. But yeah, nobody got that right. So then, rather than getting the full podium right, how many people do you think had the combination of a P1 Verstappen and a P2 Alonso?
I think there were quite a few people that would have had that. I was one of them. So actually, so were you, because our picks were very, very close after I saw the results. But I'm going to say out of 424...
Ho, 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 ho. Neither of us got Alonso on P2. We put Leclerc on P2.
Oh, right. Yes. Yes, that's true. Sorry. But I am...
Yeah, that would have been a nice score for us. Well, we're gonna look at how many points the both of us scored later, but we're not included in that. But no, we aren't. Back to the question. Okay. So P1 for Verstappen, P2 Alonso.
I'm going to say 150 people.
No, it's not that many. It was 36 people.
Okay.
So in the end, a lot of people were betting on Perez doing very well, either having him on P1 or on P2. So, yeah, there was a lot of P1 Verstappen, P2 Perez. So there were only 36 people that had P1 Verstappen and P2 Alonso. So had Hamilton overtaken Ocon, so let's say the podium would have been Verstappen, Alonso, Hamilton, how many people do you think would have gotten that right? So there were 36 people who had Verstappen and Alonso on P1 and P2. How many of those also had Hamilton in P3?
I'm going to say 15.
Only 4.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess a lot of people who had P1, Verstappen, P2, Alonso had Perez on P3, I'm supposing. So given that the scores were relatively low for this weekend, not a lot of people made it into the high scores. Actually, nobody made it into the worldwide high scores. And there was only one person who made it into the high scores of his continent. So that was Hussein Mansour from South Africa, who finished P4 this weekend. And with that, he made it into P18 of the African high scores. Other than that, no new high scores for this weekend. So what we talked about last time out is that we would also look at the scores that both you and I achieve each race weekend. So I don't know if you actually already looked at it. Do you know where you ended up?
Yes, I believe I was 38.5. So I hit the average this week.
Yeah, you did beat me this weekend. So
did I?
Yeah, you did. I scored only 34 points.
Not by much, though, because again, we... Not that we intended it, but our picks were very, very similar this week. So I knew that even if one of us was ahead, it wasn't going to be by much.
Yeah, true. No, they were very similar indeed. And did you actually see you scored the same amount of points as your mom?
Did I really?
Yeah, she also scored 38. Well, I don't know the decimal. I know she scored 38 points.
Okay, so I have to know, because I don't know, obviously, being blind going into this. What was her top three?
All right, so let me have a look. She had Verstappen, Perez, Leclerc on the podium. So she only got points for she did score a single point for Leclerc there, being three spots away. She did score points for Hamilton and Russell, and she had Piastri on P9, actually, so got a half point for that. But yeah, I see now she has 37.5 points, so technically that's half a point less than you have.
Very close, though, and yeah, kudos. Kudos to her when it comes to assuming that Piastri or hoping that Piastri would get into P9. I like it.
Me too. So do you know where you stand actually on the total ranking for like the worldwide ranking? Do you know which position you're in?
Oh, wow. We just really want to cut me open today, don't we? Because I'm telling you right now, I know it's not high. I have no idea. After this race, I have no idea where I stand.
Okay, take a guess. Wild guess.
I can't remember. Okay, last I have to try to remember where I was last week. Last week, I think I was in the top 200. Like, I think it was maybe like between 150 and 180. But judging by where I landed, I'm going to say maybe, I think I fell into the twos. So maybe 210.
Well, mind you that actually your score, 38.0, is also the exact average this weekend. So you're, I don't want to say you're average, but that's quite interesting actually getting that. No, you're in P151.
Oh, okay. I'll take that.
Yeah, that's not bad at all. I'm currently in a shared P99 together with another Dutch guy.
Okay, very nice.
Yeah, so, but you gained a little bit on me this weekend, which is good for you.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll make my baby steps, but hopefully I'll make a giant leap in Barcelona. Let's see.
Yeah, I think at this point you should aim to get into the first 100 positions as quick as you can. I think you'll get there.
Yeah, small gains.
Yeah. So so looking at the standings, we had for the last two races, well, two races ago in Baku, Tobias Joly from France made it to P1 and he stayed in P1 for Miami. He had a 36-point lead to Diana, who was in P2. So Tobias is still in P1. He scored 38 points, just like you did. And his lead, though, is now only 18.4 points. So not to Diana, because actually she went from P2 to P3. She scored 52 points this weekend. So, she lost a spot to my cousin, actually, Jipco Hofker. He's now in P2. I think he was in P4 prior to this. And he scored 61 points in this Monaco weekend. He landed on a P13 overall. So that's a really good score. And that took him to P2. So he's only 18.4 points away from Tobias. And Jipco now has 370.6 points.
Very nice.
So let's go into our regular quiz where I ask you how many people actually correctly predicted all the different positions. So let's start with P1, Verstappen. And how many people had P1 Verstappen in their picks?
I think quite a few. I'm going to say 310.
Yeah, well, actually, so in Miami, it was 318. So you're sticking very close to that. But it's interesting. There were a lot fewer people this time who predicted P1 Verstappen. It was only 210 people.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, there was actually 88 people who had Perez on P1. And there were 64 who had Alonso. And how many people went for a home win for Leclerc, do you think?
I'm going to say 40?
Yeah, you get it close.
I'm trying
54.
To do quick math here.
54.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's quite a lot. Then there were five people who had the P1 Hamilton and three people who had the P1 for Carlos Sainz.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So from P1 Verstappen, we go to P2 Alonso. We already concluded that there were 36 people who had the combination of the two of Verstappen in P1 and Alonso in P2. How many people had Alonso P2 standalone?
I have to really think about this one. My numbers are starting to jumble in my brain because I'm trying to do process by elimination mathematically. That's not going to help. So, okay. 60.
You got it right.
Do you just swore?
Yeah, I'm not supposed to.
Are we going to add that onto the podcast? Oh yeah. My god, I actually got that right.
Yeah, that's the wow. That's the first one you got right. That's really, really
ding,
good.
Ding, ding.
nice. No, I'm very glad you did. Yeah, 60 people. Great.
Wow.
with me swearing,
let's
move on. Yeah. I was gonna say the same thing.
Let's go. I'm on a roll. I'm gonna make some lottery picks this week.
All right. Yeah, well, then tell me how many people predicted P3 Ocon.
Well, I'm going to say nobody.
Oh, you got two in a row. Nice.
Yeah, well, okay, all right.
You're on the roll.
Hold on. But I will say, we had already mentioned, you had mentioned that nobody had the correct podium, which means if nobody had the correct podium, then clearly nobody chose Ocon in P3. So that was an easy guess.
There could have been people who had him in P3, but had Perez on P2.
Oh, I guess that, fair point. So I'll take that win.
Yeah. No, that's very good. Two in a row. Well, let's see if you can get any of the other ones. Hamilton P4.
Now I feel pressure.
Yeah, I know, right?
But I feel like I'm in qualifying on the last lap. I have to make this decision. Okay. 35.
64.
Okay. Well, we can't win them all.
Yeah, no, true. So Russell finished behind Hamilton on P5. Mm-hmm. How many people went with that?
I'm going to say 42.
61.
Okay.
Yeah.
So kind of the same in terms of numbers, roughly, when it comes to Mercedes and where they ended up, which, to be honest, is a fair estimation, I would think, given where they're at for the season. It's roughly where I was placing them as well. So
true. I think I had them P6, P7, if I'm not mistaken. But I think you did too, didn't you?
I sure did. Yeah, with that was one of the picks that we had that were similar.
Yeah, true. So Leclerc finished in P6. How many people had him down there, P6?
21.
Oh, yeah, you got close again. 23.
How close? Oh.
Yeah, but that's solid. Yeah, so we move from Leclerc to Gasly. Gasly finished P7. So, yeah, go ahead. Let me know.
27.
Oh, you're staying close. That's 21, actually.
No way. Okay.
Yeah. So, Sainz P8.
I don't know. This one's going to be tough. I don't think a lot of people would have picked him this far down the grid. I'm going to say 16.
Wow, you're doing a good job this
really?
Series. It's 14. 1-4.
I wish I could translate this same... I said this last podcast. I wish I could translate this same mentality into my picks every race week.
Yeah, don't work that way, unfortunately.
No. Okay, what's next?
So, Norris is next. The two McLarens are next. Ooh.
Okay.
Yeah, P9 Norris.
All right, so P9 Norris. I'm going to say let's stick to the 30s and say 36.
There were actually 60 people, which slightly surprises me too. But, yeah.
You know what? I could see that. I could see that because, again, he's one of those drivers that if you're going to pick him in the top 10 lately or historically over this season, you're choosing him towards the bottom part of the top 10. And historically as well, he does well in Monaco. So I think that it would be a safe bet to put him there.
Yeah, that's good thinking.
And it was.
Yeah, true. So final point finishing position was for Piastri and the other McLaren.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to say 12.
No way.
Don't tell me I'm right.
Yeah, you're right.
Am I really?
Yeah.
What is happening right now?
Yeah, that's incredible. So it's, I mean, you've never gotten any of them right and you get three right in one go.
Oh my goodness. I'm not kidding. I'm going to go buy a lottery ticket and pick numbers. If I win the lottery.
You probably already ran out of luck.
Don't say that. If I win the lottery, I'll tell you what. We'll all go, well, not all, I'm not treating everybody, but we'll definitely go to as many of the races as we can for the rest of the season.
Yeah, well, I'm not a big fan of lottery as a concept, so let me just refrain from commenting. But we're not yet done, because we have the fastest lap point.
Oh, right.
So,
and that was Lewis.
That was Lewis, yeah. Actually, he said it very early on in the race, and nobody could... set another faster lap with the watery conditions around the track. So how many people went for a Hamilton fastest lap? What do you think? If you get this one right as well, I'll treat you to dinner one time.
Okay, I'm going to say...
I'm glad I didn't say that before we started.
Yeah. Okay. Now I feel like I'm going to overthink this now because of the pressure. Okay.
Take your time. Take your time.
23.
Okay. All right. No, I was going to ask you where more or less.
What were you going to say?
No, I was going to ask you ballpark. Give me a range first and then move into. But you went to, what did you say? 20? How many?
I said 23.
From my enthusiasm, you can already hear that it's not correct. It was only it was only 8 people.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's
I
not
would
a lot.
I would have never thought that, to be honest with you. So
no,
I actually would have thought that more people would have picked him potentially for fastest lap. But then again, maybe not. I mean, Mercedes was introducing a new upgrade this weekend. Anything was on the table. So maybe it was more of a risky choice to choose him as a driver that would achieve fastest lap.
True. Well, if I'm honest, I usually just go with Verstappen anyway. But actually, there's usually quite a spread with the fastest lap. So, 8 people got that as a bonus point. So that was the quiz for Monaco, and I guess it's time to look ahead. Not too far ahead, because the Barcelona race is going to be very, very soon.
That's true. Next week, we're back to back again. So Barcelona next week, very excited. Anything that you're looking forward to outside of obviously the race, of course, but anything that you're looking forward to at this track?
Good question. I think it will be good, like we were already talking about, it will be good to see how Mercedes is going to do on a track like this, because I don't know, it's kind of hard to judge. I mean, they had a pretty decent weekend, but also nothing extraordinary. So yeah, it would be that would be one of my main focuses, to see whether they will be able to really challenge a bit further to get to podium positions.
I agree. I think Mercedes and a few other teams like McLaren, even Alpine, because they've been consistent in quite a few upgrades over the last several races. Ferrari has had upgrades as well recently. So Barcelona is really going to give them all an opportunity to stretch their legs more. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they fare.
Right. Well, the only other heads up that I want to give to those that play Forecast F1 is that right after the race, I'm going to be on a flight. So scores will probably be out slightly later. And so will the podcast. I guess we still got to make a plan on how we're going to record that next week. But I'm sure we'll figure something out.
Right. Anton, do you want to say where you're on a flight to?
Right. So I'll be flying to Toronto. And that will be as a preparation to go to the Montreal Grand Prix together with you, Sam, together with quite a few other people who are playing Forecast. So that's going to be really exciting.
Right.
And
that's
great. Yeah, well, I guess we're all really looking forward to that. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's look forward to Barcelona first, because I think that will also be a very exciting weekend. I'm very much looking forward to that.
Agreed. I'm very much looking forward to Barcelona, but I mean, I will get ahead of myself and say I'm very much looking forward to being at the Grand Prix in Montreal. And actually, we had to pause the podcast briefly during our recording session to buy tickets for the pit lane walk. And so that just added even more to my excitement. I'm looking forward to it all. So yes, you'll be on a plane, and we'll actually be able to, once we get to that point, who knows, record the podcast physically in the same room, which would be quite interesting.
True. Yeah. Maybe we can already work around to find a way to do that for Barcelona. But let's see. Let's see how we do that, how we get around.
Fair point. Yeah, that's right. I guess so.
Yeah. So, let's all think about predictions that we're going to make for the Spanish Grand Prix. And I'll be thinking about it during this week. What about you?
Of course. Like I said, I'm going to try to infuse the energy and my luck that I've had with these guesses today and into my picks for next week. Although I'm not that optimistic, because recently I haven't done so well, but you never know. And I would love to, you mentioned this earlier, but it would be really awesome to see Alonso win in Barcelona. that would be something, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. Frankly, I'm hoping he saves it for Montreal, but it would be amazing to get that win in Spain. I think his last win is actually in Spain, isn't it? Am I right? I might be wrong, actually.
You're going to have to go back and check that, because my memory would not be able to tell you that right now off the top of my head. But yeah, it'll be really, really great to see regardless in Barcelona. And then, yeah, we'll be able to see all drivers.
Now I'm really thinking about it. I think the last pole that he got was Germany 2012, right? And I think the last win was in 2012, but actually it wasn't a win in Spain, because Maldonado won 2012 Spain. Okay, well, I'll whenever we get to that win of Alonso, we'll mention what his last win was and how much time between the two wins.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right. Well, I guess we see each other next week.
That's it. We do. And we will talk to you all next week.
All right. Stay safe. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.